We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8 p.m. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
And make sure you're following us on all the social medias, because we out here. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet, did someone say OnlyFans, MySpace, Tinder, and catch us ticking on the talk, and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on Common Honors Arbery's life by giving away free running shoes, and Detroit Police Department sues Black Lives Matter protesters for civil conspiracy.
Also, Oregon tenants can't be evicted for not paying rent until July if they sign a form. Before George Floyd's death, Black Portlanders were killed by cops at a disproportionate rate.
But first, let's jump into Trump signs coronavirus relief and government funding bill into law after lengthy delay. President Donald Trump signed the massive $2.3 trillion coronavirus relief and government funding bill into law Sunday night, averting a government shutdown that was set to begin on Tuesday and extending billions of dollars in coronavirus aid to millions. Trump's signature of the $900 billion COVID relief package extends unemployment benefits for millions of jobless gig workers and independent contractors, as well as the long-term unemployed. However, because Trump did not sign the bill on Saturday, those in the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance and the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation programs will likely not receive a payment for the final week of the year, and the $300 federal enhancement may only last 10 weeks instead of 11 weeks for most folks. That's because states can't provide benefits for weeks that start before programs are authorized. But the legislation calls for the extra payments to end on March 14th. Trump signaled in a statement Sunday night that he signed the coronavirus bill only after securing a commitment for the Senate to consider legislation to increase stimulus checks from $600 to $2,000. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, however, did not reference that comment in his own statement Sunday night, praising the president for signing the relief bill. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has seized on Trump's call for $2,000 checks last week and brought to the floor a standalone bill that would have boosted the amount for relief checks on Thursday. House Republicans, however, objected to the bill over deficit concerns. Trump last week vetoed the National Defense Authorization Act, which passed both chambers of Congress with veto-proof majorities, in part because of his frustration over Section 230, a law that shields internet companies from liability for what is posted on their websites by them or third parties. The House is expected to act Monday to override Trump's veto, but House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy has suggested many Republicans won't vote to override Trump's veto, despite having vetoed for the bill itself. So it's unclear if the override attempt will be successful or if the veto will stand. Trump also said in his Sunday statement that he would submit a request for Congress to cut specific spending items in the COVID relief and government funding package, a nod to his litany of complaints about foreign aid. But that request, beyond freezing new spending on specified items for a period of 45 days, will have no meaningful effect. Trump will be out of office before Congress could act on any of his requests.
Take it out with a bang, 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 bang. That bang, bang, bang. So, you know, when the news came up, of course, the big news that spread everywhere was that 600 being tripled up, and it took it from a fifth pocket bundle of money
to a front pocket. Yeah.
I say, yeah, nah. But what do you think the tactic is that he's in employing here?
I think he's really just spinning his wheels. Like, he's had opportunities here to even look remotely like the good guy, and he can't even do that right. Like, he just keeps fumbling. And it's because, one, he realizes he's about to be free.
Yeah.
He's about to be free of all responsibility and scrutiny and all the things that he didn't like. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, once he's out of the office, he can continue to paint this picture he's been painting his whole life of how he's been successful, and he's got tons more supporters now to back him. So he's just ready to move on to the next phase, whether that's him running again 4 years from now, starting his cable news network that we've been hearing about. Like, he's just ready for the next move. He's not really concerned with anything that's happening right now. He could care less.
I can agree
with that. Straight up.
I can definitely agree with that. And even with the deafening silence over all this,
right?
You know, came in this past a couple of weeks.
Yeah, like my man was golfing.
Yeah,
he went from saying, you know, we're gonna get this pushed through, and this is gonna be my top priority. We're gonna get this handled, and I'm a deal maker, and then just went golfing. It's like, y'all got this. It's cool.
Not more. Before you're done.
Certainly not more.
You're done, son.
Oh my gosh. I wish his supporters really knew that he was done. Cause you know, the fact that some of these pundits are still on shows talking about, you know, this isn't over yet, and we have some more legal angles we're gonna be pursuing. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
See, several. They're on sale right now. Several. This is the time of year you can get seats pretty
Costco.
Cheap.
Costco. You can get Autumn Johns.
Right now.
Yeah. Lean back with your hands.
Well, next up, Common is now honoring Arbery's life by giving away free running shoes. February will be 1 year since Ahmaud Arbery's life ended at only 26 years old when he was killed while jogging in broad daylight by a white man, Gregory McMichael, and his son Travis McMichael. Rapper Common is now honoring Arbery's life by giving away free running shoes in Brunswick, Georgia, which is where Arbery was fatally shot. According to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, on December 18th, Common visited the Boys and Girls Club's Elizabeth Coral Teen Center in Brunswick. TMZ reports that he joined Arbery's family to give the gift in honor of Ahmaud's memory. The 48-year-old tweeted with the photo, hashtag justice for Ahmaud, hosting a special shoe drive in honor of Ahmaud Arbery out in Brunswick. Thanks to everyone who came out, God bless. On February 23rd, Gregory and Travis McMichael chased Arbery in a pickup truck after they saw him jogging through their neighborhood. Travis McMichael got into a scuffle with Arbery where they wrestled over McMichael's gun, which discharged a fatal shot. Another man, William Bryan, followed them and recorded the incident. The McMichaels were arrested and charged with murder and aggravated assault on May 7th, which was close to 73 days after Arbery was killed. They claimed the shooting was in self-defense and that they went after Arbery thinking that he was a robber after he stopped briefly in front of a home that was under construction. Bryan was charged with felony murder and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment charges. He was denied bond as well. He also faces possible hate crime charges and is currently under investigation for sex crimes.
Wowzers. No business. No business out and about.
Zero, zilch, just, and nada.
Oh, man. It's. I'm glad to see Common involved.
Yeah.
In this. This is dope.
Yeah.
This is dope. And it just sends the right message of activism. You know, we need to get involved in any which way we can. Money isn't always the answer. You know, if you don't feel comfortable out there marching, you can find some way to get involved.
Right.
And, you know, pulling together this shoe drive is dope.
Keep them names alive.
Yeah, man. You went to the Boys and Girls Club, too? Yeah, that's awesome. Well, up next, Oregon tenants can't be evicted for not paying rent until July if they sign a form. Look here, brother. This is amazing news.
Yeah.
This is great news. Sign the form.
Is that form digital?
It needs to be. Let's find out. Let's get this form out to everybody. Maybe we can put the link on the website.
Right.
Let's get it cracking.
Right.
All right. So on December 21st, the Oregon legislature passed House Bill 4401, which extended an eviction moratorium until June 30th, 2021, and appropriates $150 million to a landlord relief fund and $50 million for rental assistance. The effect of that bill, landlords across Oregon can't evict tenants for not paying rent for another 6 months until July 2021. The Oregon Law Center, which provides legal aid to financially struggling clients, released an online guide that shows renters their rights and how they can protect themselves from eviction under the new moratorium extension. After December 31st, tenants who owe back rent and are still unable to pay on time as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic must fill out a sworn declaration statement to prove financial hardship instead of simply notifying the landlords. The signed form can be sent in person or via email, text message, or mail. Those eligible must have an inability to pay for reasons that include loss of income, medical expenses, increased child care costs, or any other financial barriers. Legal penalties will apply if the declaration is signed untruthfully, but Portland renters don't have to bother with the paperwork. Multnomah County extended the county's eviction moratorium before the special legislative session on December 21st to protect renters in the county regardless of the state's decision. Hard. As a result of this, Multnomah County renters do not have to sign a declaration form. Included in the statewide moratorium extensions was money for landlords to help their tenants pay back part of their rent. And the OLC statement suggests renters ask their landlords to apply. Landlords are allowed to give a termination notice if they do not receive the sworn declaration form by the end of the year. But while doing so, landlords are required to give tenants a copy of the form and accept it if the tenants fill it out along with information about the moratorium. Under the statewide guidelines, all rent is owed by July 1st, 2021.
Look at
this. This is dope. Yeah, that's dope.
And creating that accessibility to where it can be in person, email.
Right?
Mail or text? Or text.
Come on,
you
man.
Got one of them avenues at your disposal.
Yeah, straight up, or know someone that does.
Right, that's hard.
Yeah, basically, whatever way you normally, you know, communicate with your landlord, you can use that as an option to get this form knocked out for those outside of Multnomah County. That is hard. Man. That's what's up, man.
You know, I mean, or you know, they can include in these stimuluses to get a round number and just go ahead and. Pay everybody stuff up through July.
Yeah, I mean, let's do that. But, that would be great. You know, that would be hard.
I'm just a man in a city.
You know,
with ideas,
trying to propose some plans. You know, he's with ideas.
The Detroit Police Department sues Black Lives Matter protesters for civil conspiracy. Activists in Detroit, like many of America's major cities, sued their local government for its police department's reactions to this year's Black Lives Matter protests following the death of George Floyd on Memorial Day. The Motor City activists' complaint alleges that its city's cops repeatedly responded with violence when they took to the streets. It also includes photos and descriptions of some of the gruesome injuries sustained by demonstrators, including bruised and broken ribs, concussions, a collapsed lung, and a fractured pelvis. Subsequently, the protesters asked a federal judge to bar police from using tools of excessive force, like chemical weapons, sound cannons, and rubber bullets. After the court issued temporary orders restricting officers' use of force less than a month ago, the city is now filing its official response. It includes a line-by-line denial of every brutality accusation and a countersuit. They are wilding. Their suit claims Detroit's demonstrators are part of a civil conspiracy to disturb the peace, engage in disorderly conduct, incite riots, and destroy public property. Oh, and resist police orders, among other illegal acts. It also asked the court to issue judgments declaring that the protesters engaged in this conspiracy and defamed the mayor and police, and to award the city damages. They trying to run up a bag.
Yeah, they're tripping. They're tripping hard.
The new counter complaint is adding more tension to an already tense situation between Black Lives Matter protesters and the city. Michigan Rep. Rashida Tlaib, whose congressional district includes most of Detroit, is blasting it as an unthinkable assault on constitutional rights. These attacks against us are a way of attempting to minimize our ability to go on the offensive and call for transparency and accountability, said Tristan Taylor, a plaintiff in the demonstrators' original lawsuit, according to The Intercept. This is just a way of saying to people, this is not a place where you can raise your voice. The protesters are fighting back in two different ways. The first is in court with the support of national legal groups, and the second is via city council, which has the power to cut off funding for the city's litigation. Already, one council member has voiced her opposition to the countersuit, as activists are working to lobby others ahead of a vote early next year.
Yeah, they got to get that out of here.
They came with the itemized list of rebuttal.
Like, really? Like, what are you talking about? Do you really want to create a situation where each one of the allegations has to be drawn out, like, and analyzed? Like, y'all don't want to do that. Y'all consistently in the wrong.
That.
Consistently. You're not going to win that argument.
And I'm glad that this has, you know, grabbed the attention, and there's actual legal groups willing to jump in and dissect this.
Yeah. Facts.
Yeah, this is I'm interested in seeing how this plays out, so we're going to definitely have to keep an eye and an ear to the streets.
Yeah, man, the audacity. Sheesh. On a local level, before George Floyd's death, black Portlanders were killed by cops at a disproportionate rate. Between 2004 and 2018, one quarter of all people fatally shot by officers in the Portland Police Bureau were black. According to an April 2020 report by OIR Group, an outside consultant that reviews and critiques police departments, 7 of 28 people killed by police during those years were black. Just 5.8% of Portlanders identified as black in July 2019. The disproportionate number of black victims reported at the time took on new weight amid a racial justice movement sparked a month later after George Floyd, a black man, was killed by the Minneapolis police. It became the center of a summer of protests and unrest in Portland. Ryan Pettyway, a black assistant professor of public health at Portland State University, says disproportionate police arrests, traffic stops, and use of force against black people all contribute to the disparate shootings because they increase police contact with black citizens. There's something racist and problematic in there, Pettyway says. In the sequence of events that led up to a black person being shot by police, there has to be an interaction. We have an entire policing system that is designed to interact more on black bodies than for white bodies. That's where we have to start. State Senator Lou Frederick said the disparities are something the white community started paying attention to this year, while black people have dealt with them for decades. What happened this summer was not a new item for the black community. It was a new item for the white community, he says. Pettyway says the only solution is what protesters call for all summer, defunding the police. What was revealed about the protests this year is more white people are waking up to the reality that this isn't just individuals, Pettyway says. The entire thing is problematic, and we need to start thinking about how we can reimagine this entire apparatus. Same old saying, we right back at it, defund the police.
There's a part of this that reminded me of that the UN report that was put out a couple years ago with the sentencing project, and they kind of broke down the layers, starting with the racial disparity in the U.S. criminal justice system and starting with policing. And the contact starts with there's more police contact.
Right.
And with the laws that have been put into place that have just increased that. And I guess they're, you know, the reach. And then going from there into pretrial and how you get into pretrial. A lot of people are not able to afford bail that come from these inner cities. So, and you're more likely to be sentenced to prison from jail. If that makes sense.
Right.
So then you have that. Yeah. Then you get into sentencing. And once you get into sentencing, you are more likely to be sentenced harsher.
Right. So at every point of the process,
yes,
it's stacked against us and just keeps. And it's as you get deeper and deeper into the process.
Yes.
It's crazy, man. It's like falling down a funnel.
That part.
Seriously.
But people will continue to say that. Can't be.
Yeah.
I'm tripping.
Nah, straight up, bugging.
Well, make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. again as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Special thanks to our researchers and writers, Claudia Claudio, Sham Shawan, Hannah, Alicia, and Joseph Watson.
Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by C's.
Jonathan Mattingly needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Let's go.